Charles Knicker, coordinator of the Theologian Residence Committee. When we announced some months ago that John would be our theologian in residence, there was immediate excitement. And that was seen Thursday night when we began the program at Iowa State University, because literally millions of followers or people who have read John wanted to see him, because John, as your title says, you are here. And I think we have all been blessed, any of you who have been participating from many congregations in this area. So John, we're great to be here. And as I think many of you may know, because he has a plane to catch, John will have to leave before the service is over today. But again, on behalf of all of us, thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you. Well, good morning, friends. And good morning to those watching us online. It is just as a joy to be with you. Thank you for those who have listened to me talk for 4 days and are somehow still here. And it's really, again, great to be in Iowa. Because I said how great it was to be in Ohio several times yesterday. But I want to thank pastors Betsy and Hannah for allowing me to be part of this wonderful community. They have been fantastic and hospitable. So Betsy and Hannah, thank you. And for the Ames UCC community that has welcomed me, and the TIR committee that has been so gracious. So thank you. Now, we do have some business that I need to take care of before we begin. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we had attendance, and we don't really know, we haven't done that yet today. So when I call your name, if you would just loudly say "here," that would be helpful. Lovers of humanity?
Here.
Okay, good. Tired Jesus followers?
Here.
Exhausted activists?
Here. Mm.
Bleeding heart liberals?
Here.
Rabble rousers?
Here.
People forced to be here by a partner, spouse, or parent?
Here.
Okay, good, I know. Thank you for your honesty. Helpers?
Here.
Healers?
Here.
Caregivers?
Here.
Damn givers. Amen. Great, you are present and accounted for. Thank you for doing that. I shared earlier in this weekend the story of how I ended up here. I'm not going to retell that story, but I do want you to know that the past decade of my journey has been spent ministering to a sprawling, disparate, virtual congregation made up of people all over the planet. And in the work that I do, as I've shared, I don't consider myself a pastor or an author or a speaker primarily, but a war correspondent, a collector of stories. Because I get the gift of going to a new community or reaching people where they are online and stepping into the trenches of life with people and saying, "What's happening here on the ground? Tell me so that I can tell the folks back home." And it's been a joy to be here in Ames to sit with all of you and ask you the stories that you're seeing and hearing. And doing this, making this invitation, gives me proximity to people's pain. They show me their struggles, they reveal to me their grief, and they share with me their dreams. And I leave my time with them asking myself, what are they trying to say that they cannot quite verbalize? What do they wish people could hear who don't have geographic or relational proximity with them? And I sit with people in their stories and I ask myself how I can connect their humanity with disparate humanity all over the country. And that's the work that I do. And that's why I'm here. Now, I hate to begin with so much goodwill, I hate to begin being the bearer of bad news, but I pride myself on saying stuff that needs to be said. So here's some news for you, friends. Pretty soon, we're not going to be here. 100 years from now or so, and we're all goners. Every one of us. You, me, the people we adore, the people we despise, those passing us in traffic and on our timelines, the people half a foot or half a world away, we are all hopelessly temporary. Sure, we're each doing our best to valiantly bob and weave here in the ring against gravity, but the news that I have for you is, barring some serious medical breakthroughs, gravity is and will remain undefeated. In a breathtaking flash, our time here will have expired and we will cease to be. And in a few decades, our names and achievements will eventually fade from collective memory, largely swallowed up by time and progress. We can and probably should debate the elusive mysteries and the promising possibilities of the afterlife another time, but this life, tick-tock, friends, it's a whole lot later than you think. Now, I'm pretty sure I don't need to tell you any of this, because while many people outside this building spend their lives avoiding the reality of their impending non-existence, numbing it with sensory distractions and retail therapy and TV binges, you're all really Christian people, so you don't do such things. But really, the fact that you have been here over the weekend talking about how to be people of courage and compassion in times when cruelty is trending, and the fact that you're here on a beautiful Sunday morning to gather with like-hearted people to talk about how to make the world more loving, I'm guessing you aren't a stranger to existential crises or big questions or sleepless nights or the examined life. I imagine you feel the urgency of these days and the terrifying velocity at which it's all flying by. And since you have working empathy, you're probably just beyond exhausted. You want it all to matter. You want you to matter. And because you do, I wanted to make sure you don't bury the lead today before you take another breath. Yeah, pretty soon you're not going to be here, but you are here now. That's fairly big news. You're present in this day, and it wasn't a guarantee that you would be. Approximately 150,000 people died since you and I went to bed last night. Lots of people who were here yesterday aren't here anymore, but you are. That story should be the all caps, bold type headline in your head, but it's probably already been crowded out by trending disasters on your timeline, by relational implosions you're enduring, by the length of your to-do list. It's been obscured by last minute middle school projects and unscheduled water leaks, fender benders in the parking lot, and the unexpected horror of seeing yourself in the grocery store checkout line camera feed. I want to look the way I look in front of the bathroom vanity in our guest bedroom, but I really think I look like the guy in the CVS camera, and that burdens me terribly. It's quite likely that most of the time you are so overwhelmed by the tasks and appointments and worries and obligations in front of you and the fatigue of carrying it all that you forget that you're alive. And I want you to stop for a second and remember. Press your thumb firmly into your wrist right now until you feel the blood pulsing fiercely beneath it. When you got it, say, I got it. Okay, if you don't, let us know. We'll call the proper people to help you. Now breathe for a second, slowly. Pause and notice the rise and fall of your chest, as shallow and rapid as it might be today. When you feel the breath go in and out of your lungs, say, I feel it. Be fully aware of the sights and sounds and scents around you. And once you've reconfirmed that you're alive, ask yourself why you live. Who or what is still worth spending yourself on behalf of? Is there something still worth fighting for in this day? I don't know most of you very well. I don't know your why. I just know that you have one. You have a burden you carry, a cause that grips you, a dream you can't shake, a hill worth dying on, a face across from you in the living room. You have some nagging part of you that refuses to quit despite all the experiential evidence that says you should. And this is the reason your still being here matters, because of how much is still worth fighting for. A rapidly heating planet swallowed up by unchecked gluttony is worth fighting for. A fractured nation teetering precariously on the edge of implosion is worth fighting for. An American church that is still afflicted with white supremacy and so often devoid of Jesus is worth fighting for. The decades of human and civil rights rapidly evaporating around us and the people they represent are worth fighting for. Already vulnerable people driven by their leaders to the limits of what the human heart can endure, they are worth fighting for. Your treasured relationships that are pushed to within inches of disintegration, they are worth fighting for. And perhaps as importantly, the brave but exhausted human being staring back at you in the mirror who easily forgets how much their presence alters this place is worth fighting for. So much is still worth the fight, friends, and as people of the common good, as human beings of faith and morality and conscience, we cannot willingly cede any of it. We cannot let the sun go down on this day without doing everything we can to save the things worth saving. Because despite all we've lost and all that feels so broken, we are still here. I wonder what gives you hope these days. I wonder what propels you into days that you don't want to walk into, but for some reason you still do. You still face all the threats and all the worries and all the stresses, and for some reason it has not stopped you yet, and that's something to celebrate. Recently I asked my social media followers, what gives them hope right now? A myriad of reasonable and predictable responses came back. Children, grandchildren, spouses, partners, meaningful work, food, laughter, music, and dogs. Lots and lots of dogs. I'm sorry, there were no cats listed. I'm sorry, that's all the time we have. But there was an unsettling pattern to many of the responses I got as well, because despite every breakdown of our election processes and legislative safeguards and constitutional protections over the past few years, and despite being perpetually let down and betrayed by elected officials and church leaders and federal judges, far too many people are still inexplicably waiting for saviors and superheroes to save us. People say things like, I have faith that God will make things right. I believe that love wins. I trust that goodness will persevere. And the prevailing wisdom seems to be that love and God and someone out there is going to save the day. And I wish it were that simple, friends. I wish it was that cheap and clean a proposition. Offer up some skyward prayers and make a public floodlight appeal to the heavens and wait for inevitable rescue, but that's not how this is going to work. It's not rational or biblical or possible. No, contrary to the t-shirts and memes, love will not win on its own simply because. Courageous, empathetic, people armed with sacrificial love, fully participating in the political processes and relentlessly engaging the broken systems around them will win. Wherever the disparate, sprawling army of compassionate human beings that we've enlisted in, when they spend themselves on behalf of other people, when they keep going despite being exhausted, when they refuse to tire of doing the right thing, when they will not be shamed into silence, then love will be winning. Love is not some mysterious force outside of our grasp and beyond our efforts that exists disconnected from us. It isn't supernatural magic. It's hard work. It is the tangible cause and effect of caring about our families and our neighbors and strangers and exercising that impulse in measurable ways. See, love is ornamental and worthless unless it moves from aspiration to incarnation. And God is not going to miraculously make things right either. That's not part of the deal, even though it's easy to miss that. We started off today with the reading of one of the most powerful examples of Jesus' work, and it's recorded by all four gospel biographers. Jesus has been teaching in a remote spot, and like most preachers, he's gone long. Betsy, Hannah, I don't want to say anything, but people have been talking. And his disciples, they look around and they say, Jesus, listen, you started preaching on Saturday. It's now Sunday. Chick-fil-A is closed. Where are the people of God going to eat? And Jesus says, you feed them. And they're taken aback. They begin to make excuses about what they don't have and how they can't meet that need. But Jesus asked that question, well, what do you have? This story always used to trip me up in my earlier life because I used to read this story as a how story. As Pastor Hannah was trying to help the students, the young people understand this miracle, I would get tripped up by the mechanism of the miracle when I used to read that as a how story. And then something happened. I began to read that story as a who and a what and a why story. And the who was Jesus, and the what was Jesus feeds people, and the why is because they were hungry. What's revelatory in this story is not really just the miracle, not just what Jesus does, but what he doesn't do. There's no altar call. There's no spiritual gifts assessment test. There's no comparing of everyone's voting history or theological beliefs to see who is worthy to be fed. Their hunger and Jesus' compassion make them worthy to be fed. And so for me, once I changed that story as a who and a what and a why story, I realized I want to be in the work of feeding people. Whatever they need, I want to be there. And I think that's why you're here to do that same work. I love when the disciples kind of shrug their shoulders and say, we can't do this. And they look at the impossibility of the circumstances. And he says, bring whatever meager provisions you have so that he can multiply them. God or the universe or whatever you believe holds this place together isn't fixing this without a movement of people. And you and I, we get to be those people. We who are harboring a ferocity of humanity, born of our moral convictions and propelled by our spiritual centers, are going to need to move in order to make right all that is so terribly wrong, friends. We're going to have to sacrifice sleep or relationships or comfort in order to step into the messy, jagged trenches of people's pain and remind them that good people still inhabit this place. We are the beautifully imperfect angels who get to bring the good tidings of great joy. So love and God are not going to work independently of us. And we know from our friends in politics that thoughts and prayers alone aren't fixing this mess either. But what will alter the story we find ourselves in is prayerful people who reflect fully on the fractures and the malignancies and the injustices in front of them and decide they will change what they can change and do what they are able to do. The prayer Jesus prays in the Sermon on the Mount is not concerned with escaping skyward to heaven. It is bringing heaven down here. Heaven will come as ordinary mortals here on the ground endeavor to be the answer to as many of their prayers as possible. That's not to say there aren't things working outside of what we can see and measure and quantify, but it means that we are able to do physical things, help and heal and give and protest and volunteer and canvass and vote. We have proximity and agency. And if we do those physical things in the small and close and here and now of our lives, then we'll be able to at least rest and welcome the mysteries, knowing that we did all we could with what we are entrusted with. God isn't going to ensure that our schools are safe for LGBTQ children. Love isn't going to make assault weapons less available in our streets. Jesus isn't going to secure our elections and ensure everyone has a vote and a voice. Love isn't going to magically legislate protections for the planet and the poor and the marginalized. God isn't going to dismantle the systemic racism still afflicting our nation. Jesus isn't going to loudly push back against anti-immigrant bigotry when it shows up in our neighborhoods and news feeds and holiday gatherings. You and I are, whether we are compelled by love or God or simply an acute sickness in our stomachs that will not let us rest. Human beings fighting together for the common good will do all of these things. That's why I'm here and why I hope you are here. Warriors for the common good?
Here.
Thankfully, you're still here. I have a lot of uncertainty these days, even about my own faith tradition at times. But here's what I do know. I know that he was about more than just punching someone's ticket to heaven. Because if that's all Jesus was about, the Gospels would be a whole lot shorter. We'd have an altar call prayer, and that would be about it. If it were just a transactional exchange for the afterlife, that's all we would have. But what do we see? We see four biographies of Jesus. We see him living in relationship with people, dining with them, sitting on hillsides, attending wedding celebrations, standing over sick beds, moving through the world, healing, feeding, embracing, and we see Jesus showing that theology is embodied or it's useless. Jesus invited the disciples to experience life alongside him. Why? So that someone could replicate his heart and perpetuate his work, and that's why you and I are here today. Jesus said, take my yoke, my burden upon you and learn from me. Learn how to carry difficult things in painful times. Jesus said, I've washed your feet. I have given you an example to replicate. Go and serve and care and humble yourselves and get low to meet the needs of others. Jesus said, the people are hungry. You give them something to eat. Yes, pray, but move. Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you, not in a way that it's easy, not in the way you would prefer, but the way that you have seen me loved. And Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. He says, have courage. I've showed you how to live with courage. This is the invitation that Jesus offers those of us who would follow him in the ways of compassion and mercy and love and justice. It is a ministry of presence and proximity, a beautiful act of being with people and emulating him. He's saying, you are still here. Do whatever it is you know to do right now. You're not responsible for anything more than that. Friends, you will always have those two things, proximity and agency. You will always be somewhere, and you can always do something. You have humanity in front of you in need, and you have the ability to meet some of those needs. What a glorious bit of news that despite everything happening, you are still
here.
We're coming up on Pride Month, and I remember Pride Month last year ended with a Supreme Court decision that paved the way for businesses to deny LGBTQ human beings services based on religious objection. Equally crushing news soon came regarding the right to choose and affirmative action and student loan debt relief. These human and civil rights rollbacks have been made possible by people claiming to be followers of a Jesus that they would have complete contempt for were he here. In this day, we find ourselves being called to be advocates for the common good in a world where it is now far more difficult, the opposition more galvanized and emboldened, and the need for empathy far greater. But thank God you are here. 56 years ago this week, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed because his dream of equality was a nightmare to people weaned on the myth of their own supremacy. And 56 years later, it seems like very little has changed. And I know what I want to do some days. Maybe it's what you want to do on some days. I want to quit. You ever want to just pack it in? Stop caring? Find another place to call home? Move to a bluer state or a kinder nation? If you can't do that, maybe you at least want to turn off the news and be oblivious to the losses and the overreach and the regression like so many people you know who don't seem affected in the least by what's happening right now. But we know that we cannot do any of those things. Because if we do, the same people who are celebrating the rollbacks and the regressions will have an even easier time bending the arc of the moral universe from justice. They will be emboldened. They will have fewer barriers between them and those they seek to render invisible. And I know that with all that we have lost, there is always more to lose. And because of that reality, there's always something worth fighting for today, friends. Persistent fighters of the worth of every human being. Thank you. Today, before I get to go on a plane, I'm going to ask you to be irrational. Irrationality and spirituality are often tethered together. Hopelessness is probably the most rational response right now, right? Looking at the stripping of human and civil rights, seeing a compromised court gutting the fruit of generations of activism, knowing what we know about people we love and live alongside. Hopelessness makes sense right now, but we can't choose hopelessness because that would mean that we concede to the wall builders and the book banners, not only the recent past, but the present and future as well. Falling into permanent despair or apathy would be giving away not merely the last few years, but today and tomorrow too. It would mean allowing those motivated by fear and exclusion to win the battle uncontested. And most importantly, hopelessness seeds the narrative within our heads to those who do not deserve that gift. You get to write the story in your heads about the world and what is still possible. What are you saying? What is the story you are telling yourselves? Hope right now is a bit irrational, but it doesn't mean it's the wrong choice. Hope is always the right choice because it's the only one that keeps us moving forward. In 1942, Jewish Austrian neurologist, psychiatrist, and philosopher Viktor Frankl was sent to a German prison camp where he would be for 3 years while losing his father, mother, his brother, and wife. Frankl ended up earning a PhD in philosophy from the University of Vienna and writing a book called Man's Search for Meaning, which many of you may have read. Based on his experience in a prolonged period where nearly everything was out of his control and where the prospects were extremely dire, when life should have felt pointless, but in the middle of that, Frankl writes, Everything can be taken from a human being, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in a given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. We choose our own way every day. We wake up and step into a world and are faced with challenges and questions and crises and heartbreak and tragedy, and we decide whether circumstances will determine our internal condition or whether we will. Whether the trending news will dominate the headlines in our heads or whether we will write a different story. Frankl says, between stimulus and response, there is a space, and in that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. You are still here. The present, like the one we sit inside right now, the one you inhabit as you encounter these very words, is always the space between stimulus and response. In this space, we have one thing: the choices we make based on what we believe matters. We don't receive any guarantees of success or promises of health or assurances of safety. We also don't control the courts or the politicians or the systems, even while we work to nudge them in whatever ways we can, individually and collectively. We do have the space between what happens and what we decide to do with what happens. Our elected leaders continue to move us toward theocracy. The courts have handed down some despicable decisions. The street preachers and their families and the churches and those who fear what they fear and believe what they believe are celebrating today and feeling emboldened. And we need to be equally emboldened to show up, to be barriers to hatred, to be the joyful noisemakers, to be a visible and vocal presence that will not allow people to be erased or excluded. There is always something left to lose and always something that we can save. Iowa needs people who are alive and who still believe diversity is worth fighting for. Iowa needs people who will step into people's stories and make them feel visible. And this community, you, right now, can begin to do the work that you so know needs to be done. Nothing is preventing you. Nothing is hindering you. Today, instead of looking to the sky and waiting for a pastor or a politician or some invisible force to come in and dramatically beat back the darkness, you wield the brilliant light in your possession. Maybe you're the hero you've been waiting for. Maybe you're the answer to the urgent prayers. Maybe hope isn't in the sky. Maybe it's in the mirror. Yeah, the less than ideal news, friends, is that pretty soon you'll be gone. The beautiful news is that people of fierce, abiding, scandalous love, you are still thank God you're here. Amen. It's been a joy to be with you. Amen.